Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Women Worldwide. Thank you so much for being here. Today's episode is all about being alone and feeling comfortable when you're alone. So in other words, going out to that restaurant and getting that table for one. I sit down with Rebecca Iliff, who is actually coming back on Women Worldwide. She's an alum. And when I met Rebecca, she was a tech founder. She's an entrepreneur and a writer. Her work has appeared in Mashable, Forbes, Entrepreneur Magazine. And now she is an author of the new book, Champagne for One, A Celebration of Solitude. In this episode, Rebecca dives into how to be alone, how to be more comfortable, why it's so important, and the lessons that she's learned. So rather than me going on and on about Rebecca, it's time she shares her journey and advice with you. Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life. Hi, Rebecca. It's so great to have you back on Women Worldwide.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'll tell you, I've known you for so many years, and this latest journey has just been an amazing one for you. So you are an entrepreneur, you're an accomplished writer, and you just wrote your book, which I absolutely love, Champagne for One. Why this book, Rebecca, and why now?
It's a great question. A lot of people have assume that I wrote it during the pandemic because of the subject matter of solitude. I actually started the project back in 2017, right after a really close friend of mine who lived here in Nashville passed away. And you know the story behind that. And it kind of threw me into this phase that I wasn't expecting, where I was alone in a new city. I was obviously very sad and grieving. And I put work to the side and I really just focused on, you know, moving into my new house, taking a lot of time to reflect on what I was doing here and what to do with the rest of my life. Really, I think grief does that to people. So as a result, I spent a lot of time alone in 2017 and then the beginning of 2018, just reflecting and writing on the process of how to be alone, why it's important, why I had so many hangups about it, and really just trying to embrace it in all its various forms. So that was the genesis of the book. I then wrote a poem called Champagne for One that ended up getting published in Chicken Soup for the Soul, and then had a publisher that was interested in the concept and building a more built out book around this concept of solitude. So that's the genesis of the idea and of the book.
Well, you mentioned something interesting, learning how to be alone with yourself and why there are so many hangups. Can you just share what you think maybe the top hangup or a couple of hangups might be?
I think a lot of it just has to do with the culture. We live in an environment that, particularly now with social media and this idea of connection and romantic partnerships, that really prioritizes relationships, which of course are important and a vital part of being a human. But I think what gets lost a lot of times is being alone and cultivating alone time and having solitude to re-energize, reflect, or calibrate really doesn't get talked about in a positive way. If anything, it gets talked about in terms of more of a negative vantage point. So, oh, that person's alone. There must be something wrong with them. They must be shy. They must be introverted. They must be a wallflower or can't catch a partner, catch a spouse. And so I have spent a lot of time in my life alone in new cities and new places. And to a degree, had to learn the habit of solitude and not always needing someone around in order to be fulfilled. And I got married quite late, so I had a lot of time to learn that. But I do think a lot of it is more cultural than anything.
I think so too. What are some of the main takeaways for the readers of your book that you want to share?
It's a great question. The first one is really just how to be alone and do it well and celebrate it. It is a humor book and it's an illustrated humor book. My artist is Holly Mayer. She lives here in Nashville. She's wonderful. She did such a great job of capturing the essence of the stories and the satire and all of that. So that would be the first one, just how to have fun with it. The second is really, so in addition to this idea of connection, where we live in a world where it's connect, relationships, the other part is this idea that we always have to be the group in order to really be a good citizen or a good person or a good colleague. And so part of it too is just embracing this idea of personal freedom and independence as part of solitude. So it's okay to say, no, I'm not interested in what you're selling. I'm not interested in, being part of the group, or I want my own thoughts and I want to have my own thinking around certain things. And the last, of course, is to just laugh and have a good time and have an opportunity to kind of give yourself permission to do things alone as opposed to always find someone to couple up with. So I talk about, going to the movies, going for a long walk, going for drives, going to a swanky bar by yourself and just kind of observing people in their element and making an enjoyable experience out of something that's usually thought of as something to do in pairs.
Well, there were certain, stories in your book that resonated with me. The whole concept of going to the restaurant or the bar. And I remember being alone in New York several times. And I would go in and I'd ask for a table. But Rebecca, unlike what you shared in your book, sitting in the center of the room and just being able to sit there and read and do something, when I was younger, I would always look out the window. I would have to be watching something. So that's really interesting. And it feels like that was cultural, especially in a New York City.
Very new to do.
Yes. And so you shared a lot of stories and there are a lot of takeaways. Maybe you could share a favorite story. Do you even have one?
It's so funny because many people have asked me this in interviews and it feels so awkward to be like, oh yeah, I have a couple of favorite stories, which just means I really like my own writing, which I suppose is good. But I think my top favorite story is probably Ladies Who Lunch, because I feel like it's such a kind of a dig at this concept that I was talking about in terms of always wanting to be part of the group and like include. And people are trying to include you, but you really don't want to be included. You just want your own time. So it is a pretty classic satire form. And so that was really fun for me to write. I also really like stag stew because I think it's just quick and I can share. Do you want the recipe for stag stew?
Yeah, if you don't mind sharing.
Talk about that. Yeah. So I won't read the whole story, but essentially the concept is this recipe for being alone. So the first is 4 ounces of confidence. The second is 6 ounces of letting that go. I'm not going to say the bad word on the podcast, but you can imagine. So 6 ounces of letting things go. 3/4 cup of embracing personal freedom. 3/4 cup not caring about other people's opinions. 1 cup of good humor. 1.5 cups of books, magazines, and shows you love. And 1 gallon of your favorite fizzy beverage. I may have gone overboard on the gallon of fizzy beverage, but so that's kind of a fun one.
That is an awesome recipe. Going back to something you said, and you did face a tragedy and you found your way to stepping back and reflection. As you were doing that, did you find, because I went through this as well with a tragedy in my life, that as I stepped back and would take more time, and maybe it's because of the industry we grew up in, a lot of people were nervous about Deirdre spending too much time, or where's Deirdre, or where's Rebecca? Did you find that with people around you? Because it is such a shift from the people person to finding the time and really reflecting.
I had a unique experience in that I had just moved to a new city. And so I was really away from my San Francisco life and out of the day-to-day of my company at that point. So I think if anything, it was less about people going, where's Rebecca? And people going, is she okay? And me going, am I okay? And is this okay to totally check out? So I think at the point that all of that happened, I had already been distancing myself a bit from this very frenetic, hectic, constantly on, traveling, building life, and had got to a really nice place, had great co-founders that were very understanding of the situation. And so if anything, it was just me accepting this, that this was what I needed as someone who had historically been really focused on other people and relationships and trying to show up to be a good family member, a good friend, a good colleague. And so that my growth really came with just accepting that I needed it. And I actually need a lot more alone time than I had even anticipated.
It's so amazing.
Imagine that before I wasn't getting enough and now I need even more. And so, you know, the running joke, and I write about this in the book, but is that I have my own bathroom. My husband and I.
That was one of my favorite stories. you hit one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's a fun one. But we don't, you know, we've known each other now for 4.5 years, and we've been married for 3, and we don't share a bathroom because I just need that to me as my sanctuary. It's, you know, getting ready when I finally start to get ready at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, now that we're all in pajamas most of the day. But, you know, it's my space and energy and all of that. So it's, you know, I think that is the case for a lot of people. They probably need a lot more space than they give themselves only because of their situation. You know, we don't have any kids. It's a little bit easier to find that space, but.
Exactly. So Rebecca, is there a lesson, maybe something you've learned along the way that really sticks at whatever point in your career that you want to share?
The biggest lesson has been that just because one is good at something doesn't mean it's what they should be doing with their time. So I shared with you a little bit earlier about this Japanese concept of, I think it's Ikigai. It's a colleague of mine, Alexis, just shared it with me, but we can put it in the show notes. But
great.
The idea is that you find, you know, this, what you're good at, how you can make money, what the world needs, and what you love. And it's a Venn diagram concept. But I think for a long time, I spent doing things that I was good at. You know, I'm a decent writer. I'm a good communicator. I'm good at relationship building. And I could make money from it. Maybe it's what the world needed, but it isn't really what I loved in a sense. And so now I feel like I had spent a lot of time just giving a lot of my creative energy to other people, to brands, to, you know, to companies. And so now in retrospect, it's that I have more of that energy for myself and for my own writing. And I still love doing the client work and have some great brands and companies that I work for or work with, I should say, through my company, Write Best. Pretty specific and particular about the type of clients, but now I just have more space for what I really love to do. So that's probably my biggest lesson. You can be good at a lot of things, you know, and you can love to do a lot of things, but can you make money from it? And does the world need it? And is it important? So I think it's finding that balance of that, you know, those 4 things and really finding the space that's right for you. And everyone's going to be different. It's going to look different for everybody.
I agree. I think that there's a lot of external influences that sometimes shape who we are and what we do over the years. And you can be good at something, but that doesn't mean that your heart and your passion and every fiber of your being is into it and wants to do that. Thank you. Thank you for sharing the lesson. I think that's a really good one. What do you think, friends, colleagues, how would you share with them to sort of take a step to get past a struggle, to realize what it is you're good at, to find your purpose. What are first steps that they can do?
Well, as I talk about in the book, I think a lot of it is just finding space to reflect. I don't think culturally we are set up for that to be an easy thing. You know, there's noise coming at us from all places, you know, social media, that's a discipline too. You don't have to be on those things, but I think most of us are for various reasons. So, you know, how do you shut out the noise? How do you reflect? How do you kind of get back in touch and ground yourself with things that you love and things that you enjoy doing? And part of that is yourself with people who you know, you trust, and who have your best interest in mind. For me, what a lot of it has been is just a lot of writing and observing and reading and listening to, not, I don't want to say the voices in my head, but at the same time,
Wait, wasn't that a book that you had shared with me by Michael Singer?
Probably, because I feel like it happens a lot. It's that weird voice in my head.
The Untethered Soul, all those voices. Yes.
Yeah, all the self-talk. But I just think we need space, and I think we need a lot more space than we give ourselves credit for, and that we allow ourselves, and also setting up really strong boundaries. I mean, why do we let all these people and things and demands occupy our time? What is that serving? How is it helping us become the best version of ourselves, sharing our gifts that we're, I mean, I think that you believe this too. We're all meant to be here in some way to enact our gifts that we've been given. And so when you're not taking the time and you don't have any space to reflect or meditate or pray or whatever it is your mechanism for doing, for getting in touch with your real feelings and your real desires, we're going to like just go off on whatever tangent comes our way.
I think the pandemic did have something to do with a lot of people stepping back and either reflecting or having additional time, because I remember seeing a statistic that 34.5 million people quit their jobs, handed in their resignations, and that was back in September of 2021. And I think it was over 40 million by the end of the year. So the pandemic definitely helped people, not that we want a pandemic certainly to give us any kind of direction or space or reflection, but there was something there that has people saying, maybe I need to rethink what I'm doing and I don't want to be a part of this job.
Yeah. And I think that was the silver lining. Of course, we do need people to get back to work, and we need people to be in jobs. I mean, that is important. So I think just underscoring that is also a big part of, I think, of all of the fallout of this. But I do believe that many people, when they were forced into this isolated period away from loved ones, away from some of the noise, there was other noise going on. But in a sense, it's, you know, I think people really sat back and went, why do I need to be crazy at work?
Right.
Crazy commuting into work, being at work. Do I really like what I'm doing? There is a lot of negativity around. It seems like, you know, death is imminent. Of course, at the very beginning, we've now come to know that that's not necessarily true, but we didn't know what we didn't know
right.
was going on.
There were a lot of unknowns.
There's a lot of unknowns. With unknowns comes the opportunity to double down on your faith and double down on your value system and really try to keep the people that you love and care about really close. Grief and trauma does the same thing. So in a sense, what I experienced in 2017, what you experienced a year later, is what, and that many people experience on a regular basis, happened to all of us at the same time. And so what that does is it really kind of shakes the core and has people reevaluating what is this reason for being, or what is the purpose, or am I happy? Do I love my spouse? How do I treat my kids? Do I like my job? Why am I working with like Joe, this total jerk, or whatever? And right. And just give you the permission to step back and evaluate what's working and what's not. So
I think that's key. What you just said, permission, giving yourself permission, because if you're focused externally, then that's going to dictate how you show up, what you do, where your purpose lies and your energy. But giving yourself permission just to be you and reflect and do what you want to do says a lot. Really quickly, what inspires you, keeps you motivated? What's your muse, so to speak, for writing?
I do love it. I do feel fulfilled when people respond, like you responded earlier. You know, when I get that text message from a friend, I just read something you wrote, I was laughing so hard. It's so true.
You're so funny.
That makes me happy. It's being a writer, as you know, it's part of your job. It's a very difficult endeavor. It takes a lot of discipline. It's a lot of work. You know, people have said, oh, this, you know, this must be a labor of love. I'm like, it's not. It's not a labor of love. It's work and it's discipline. Obviously, I love it. But the thing that keeps me going is that I don't know how to live without doing it because I've tried. I've spent many years of my life building companies, trying to find that space to get these things out of me that I know are there. And I always end up kind of in a miserable place. And so that does keep inspired, of course, yoga, meditation, hanging out with my husband and my dog and going for long walks and reading great books and hanging out with friends, all the normal stuff. It's not, you know, unfortunately, I'm not very unique. I'm kind of boring in that way.
Oh, I'm boring.
I wish there was some silver bullet, but it really is just doing the day-to-day things well and with discipline and ridding yourself of all the things that don't align. That's a lot of it. And I think it
or the toxic.
If you're 40, of course, we've talked about this, I think, before on the show and many times in general. If you haven't gotten to that point by the time you're in your 40s where you understand, like, this is in alignment with my value system, with my morals, with my faith, with my gifts, all of that, it has to, at some point, something's got to give. And either you get kicked off a cliff, which I certainly did, and I know you have been at different points in your life, or you let things go and recognize it sooner. So I do think going back to the original question, which is what inspires you, it's all the things that I've done wrong in the past and that haven't worked for me. It's like, oh, right, I tried to do that and it didn't work. So I'm going to do something different this time and hope that this leads me to a better place or to a better is subjective, but more fulfilling, you know, a more fulfilling where I feel like this is what I'm supposed to be doing. These are the things that I love to do.
Well,
that was a really long-winded way of answering the question, but
I think it was a great answer. Whatever you're doing, Rebecca, keep doing it because your book is so good. From the writing to the illustrations, I think everybody can walk away. They can read this book and walk away with a better sense of how important solitude is and what that means and finding your purpose. So I can't believe we're up to the parting advice. Yes, there it is.
My husband said to me this morning, you look like a giant bottle of champagne with that gold dress on. And I didn't realize that. I guess that gold's kind of today is the launch of the book, by the way, the official release.
Goodness. Congratulations.
Release day. Yes. It's, we have sold, I think, 1,000 on pre-order already. So that's
wonderful.
And hoping that it keeps going.
It's going to keep going because you truly have so much energy and love and passion for what you're doing. And it shows. So I can't believe I'm going to ask you for parting advice, even though you've shared a ton with us. Please tell everybody out there, the Women Worldwide Network, what is the best way to celebrate that solitude and so that they can go and order that champagne for one.
Okay, so you know I don't like giving advice because I feel like I'm the worst person. Like, don't listen to what I have to say. But just know that alone time and solitude is the other half of our human experience. And once you know that in order to be able to be in relationship with other people that's healthy and that has meaning, you have to also be able to live with yourself. and to enjoy your own company. If we can master that in no uncertain terms, but in our own way, it's been my experience that life is just, it's just better. It's more fulfilling. We make better decisions about who to spend our time with. And also being able to do what you want is really important, and it's deserved by busy moms, career women, dads. I mean, everyone deserves that time to just say, hey, you know what? I'm going to check out and I'm going to go binge watch Emily in Paris. I don't know why I use an example. It's, by the way, it's the best show. But
I'm up to date with all the seasons. So
yeah, it's, you know, so yeah, we've got to own those moments. We have to be able to, in order to show up for others, we really have to be the best version of ourselves, as cliche as that sounds.
Yeah, that's excellent advice. Learn to spend time with yourself, and it's so much better that way. It really is. Rebecca, where can people find out more about you, your book, and your work?
The easiest thing is to go to champagneforone.com. It has all the events. I have about 15 events now across the US, physical events, some virtual events starting to pop up as well. And then you can pre-order the book from there. It's sold, books are sold. So you can buy it from my publisher, Collective Book Studio. You can buy it at Amazon, Target, Barnes and Noble, also local booksellers. So if you're in a city that has an independent bookstore, they should be able to order if they don't already have it in stock. So it's pretty much everywhere, but it's really simple, champagneforone.com. And everything you need to know, you can contact me. You can follow me on Instagram for stuff going on. It's all there. It's kind of the hub for all things book-wise and others and events and speaking and all of that.
Awesome. Rebecca, thank you so much for coming back on the show and for sharing everything that you're doing. I hope everybody goes out and gets a copy of your book and reaches out to you. So thank you.
I appreciate you, Deidre. Thank you so much.
Anytime. And to all of you out there, you know what I always say, keep the conversations going and feedback coming. You know where you can find me. I'm on Twitter at Dee Breckenridge, or connect with me on LinkedIn. Until our next episode, friends, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.